Hello everyone, welcome to PC Gamer Podcast. I'm Tim, I'm the editor of PC Gamer. Joining us in the studio today to talk about hot button PC gaming news and features and content are Rich McCormick, our staff writer.
Hello.
Hello. Tommy Rich, why are you exciting?
Because
wow. It's like, a tough thing for anyone to
answer. Tom, hello. Why are you exciting?
I'm Tom Francis, I'm the section editor.
That's why I'm excited.
Oh God, I'm on the spot.
Craig,
I haven't heard the phrase "hot button" since 1963.
Okay. And Craig Pearson, our news editor.
Hello.
Who also looks after most of the rest of the magazine as well.
Yes, that's true.
Why are you exciting or excited?
I've just come back from Africa.
You have just come back from Africa. That was. You said some obscene things on Twitter, actually, that you should be ashamed of.
Yeah,
but we'll come back to that in a little bit.
Or never.
So we've got a new issue coming on sale in July. It's on sale 6th of July. And the cover is an amazing image from Aliens Colonial Marines. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But tonight is kind of like the morning after the night before, because last night we had a big...
Tonight is the morning after?
Okay, this morning... Picture the scene.
It's a dark and stormy morning.
It's 3 a.m. and we're on the internet because you can't sleep. And Valve drop the bombshell that is Team Fortress 2 is free to play.
It was really confusing. They said Team Fortress 2 is free. And we're like, we know. You announced this free week, like last week.
So it's been free for a week and now it's free forever.
I love that that's how they launched into it. It was like, okay, TF2 is going to be free for a week, guys. Also forever.
What does that mean? What have they done? Why is it exciting? Is it exciting? Is it going to ruin the game?
It's kind of weird because like for a whole bunch of hardcore gamers, this is a complete non-announcement because of course we own TF2.
Like, yeah.
I think it is the most commonly owned game on my Steam friends list.
Yeah.
Like everyone I know owns TF2. But obviously, I mean, if you look at any... free-to-play thing versus its nearest pay-for equivalent, the player figures are astronomically bigger.
Yes.
And I think that probably is going to happen with TF2. Even though it's old, I think it's just something that's always in the news and always getting publicity, and so it probably will start to spread pretty spectacularly now.
You come to it now as well, it doesn't feel anything like the first game. I wouldn't say necessarily is old. It's kind of a weird term for it. Obviously it is old, but it's not in any way really old.
So the interesting thing about TF2 is I think it's the best multiplayer game Valve have made. Ever. It's beautiful, but it's never achieved the kind of popularity of Counter-Strike and Counter-Strike Source, which put together are like five times the player base of TF2.
I mean, to be fair, no action game on PC ever has. I mean, look at Steam list, like Call of Duty is on there, but it's nowhere near as high as Counter-Strike.
Yeah, right. But then you look at the success of some of the free-to-play games and the player numbers, and they are...
Yeah.
In absolute fairness, they are not as good or anywhere near as good as TF2 is.
And you mean the quality of the game, not the player
count? Yeah, the quality of the game. But they are achieving higher player counts.
I don't know if it will take off as much as you guys think, because I think the idea of free-to-play is you go to a website and you download it from there.
Right.
It doesn't seem to be, you know... Steam seems to be a step in the...
There's two ways to look at it, isn't it? Like, it's the best viral marketing for Steam to expand the audience for Steam Valve could come up with. But also, it's the barrier to entry for getting to play TF2 means you have to download Steam, create an account, then install TF2.
I mean, everything free-to-play requires you to create an account, and most things, like League of Legends, require you to download an executable, which then runs an installer, which then downloads updates and then installs those.
Those mechanisms are always a pain.
Yeah.
But it seems like the only program I've ever felt comfortable installing because I know about it. If I'm asked to install a program and install another program, that always makes me feel a bit dodgy about these things. I think it's Valve's attempt to break into the Asian market.
Right.
Really.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, there's an enormous amount of people over there that would probably quite like a game about blowing up guns, blowing up men and hats.
There's a bunch of games that rip it off already.
One thing that's interesting is why they didn't do this sooner. Like, not in terms of why didn't they do this years ago, but why didn't they do it when they announced the... bad bit of the free-to-play, which is, you know, paying for items, which is what most people have an objection to. No one really has an objection to something being free.
It's almost been like a kind of a slow cut, hasn't it?
I think it might have something to do with when they did the Mankind update. I was out there a little while before they announced it and talked to Robin about it, and I said, well, are you gonna make the game free? And they said no, because the cost of buying the game is the only penalty you pay if you get caught cheating at TF2.
Right.
So that's the only thing they can wield against cheaters. Every time you're caught, you have to pay for TF2 again to start up a new account. And in the FAQ for TF2 free, they say one of the frequently asked questions, I don't know how they're frequently asked, says, isn't it going to be full of cheaters and hackers now? And they said, well, we've got some sort of new ways of paying attention to people who create multiple accounts and tracking that and stopping that. But I don't know how...
That's interesting.
How reliable that'll be.
It seems as well that it's hit this time now where free-to-play isn't so much of a dirty word. I mean, it was a time when, a couple of years ago, a year ago, free-to-play meant it's fairly flimsy bit of non-game, really.
So it's free-to-play. How much does it cost to buy the new items?
The new Uber pack is on sale now for 70 quid.
70 quid?
Yeah.
What?
That's everything.
The most expensive free-to-play game ever created.
That's everything.
That's what a monocle costs in EVE Online.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, that's something they just announced there. That's a discount of, I think, more than half. I think it's 144 if you buy them all separately.
What would you get?
That's just the new stuff, sorry.
What'd you get? Did you get how many new weapons? I haven't looked at it properly.
There's something for every class except the engineer.
Yeah.
But the scout, the scout gets a full pack. I think the pyro only gets one weapon.
The pyro gets the only weapon I want.
The flare launcher.
The flare gun.
Yeah. You can apparently
flare jump.
You can flare jump.
It's just a rocket launcher, then, surely.
But it's something like you shoot someone with a flare, and then you get to choose when the flare detonates.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's right.
I think you can detonate the flare in midair. I don't know if you can detonate it as after it hits someone or not. But we've yet to play with this stuff, so.
It's not really like giving it away is the best thing they could possibly do because there is so much money to spend in TF2.
I mean, that's 70 quid, but all those items, I think apparently, apart from like maybe 1% or 2% of them, are craftable. So you can get them for free if you just play the game.
Yeah, and I think the only ones you can't craft or find are cosmetic ones like hats and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, those are the most expensive too.
They might come eventually. I think Valve tend to leave them uncraftable for a few weeks or a few months or something, and then add them. There's new taunts as well that they've included, like the dove taunt for the medic.
Oh yeah.
The bit from the video when the medic walks through the doors and the doves fly behind him, that's a taunt now.
Do I have to buy that?
Yes.
No.
It's one of the cheaper ones though. It's like 3 quid or £1.50 or something like that.
Yeah, but
I know spending the money.
Here's a question: around this table, who has bought something for TF2?
I haven't yet.
I have. Yeah.
What did you buy?
Spy weapons.
Okay, Rich, what did you buy?
I bought pyro weapons, and also I bought keys because whenever I'm presented with a locked box and the ability to buy a key for a small fee, I always do it.
Oh, I'm going to trade all my boxes to you then.
I've stopped doing that.
Just give him all your boxes. Yeah, just to create him.
What I think is kind of strange about it, like, a couple of years ago, if we talked about TF2, it would always be, that's Valve's attempt to keep the community sweet. They don't earn any money from it. And that's what
it is. Their altruistic thing.
But then they kind of, like, very slowly, without me really kind of consciously thinking about it, they have now switched it in my head from this is the altruistic thing where they're not trying to make cash to, TF2's been doing this for a long time. It's trying to make money. And they have done this over a period of time. I think if they had just gone, here's TF2, free to play now, then everyone would be like, whoa, that's not.
I think there's just like a load of infrastructure they had to build to make it work, and they didn't know if it was going to work. And if they launched it free and also put the store in and also did all the new kind of free-to-play mechanics and economy stuff behind it and all the web stuff they have to do to get there, and then put all that out in one batch, it would definitely break and it'd be the worst possible launch for TF2's free to play possible.
You completely, you can imagine. I think every consumer who had got onside before would just be completely against them.
The really interesting part is that the people who already own TF2 are now kind of TF2 premium players, and anyone who's bought anything in the Manco store is also a premium player, and anyone who does in the future is a premium person. As far as I know, you can no longer buy TF2, which I mean, it sounds like a stupid thing to say, but what's interesting is what Craig says, that if you buy anything at all in the Manco store, then you get the game for free. And I think the reason they've done it that way is that it's worth more to them to have somebody okay with the idea of buying in-game items than it is for them to pay 10 quid to get premium thing, because they assume that if you're going to buy one item, as soon as you've like crossed that mental barrier of, okay, I will now pay for in-game content, you're now a Steam in-game content customer for life, and that's probably what
70 quid. So this all started with horse armor. And look how far we've come.
It's kind of like, in general, I'm positive about it because it's, TF2 is going to be massively popular, and I think it's a good move for Valve, and it's this nice thing that they're doing where Steam becomes just a really valuable thing to be a part of. Like, if you're on Steam now, you have TF2.
Yeah,
that's an awesome game, and it's just a great kind of package. But actually, for me personally, as a TF2 player, I've already been kind of moving away from it because I don't get any of the new items anymore because I'm not going to buy them and I don't play enough to find them. And
the problem I have with it is I've spent a lot of money on TF2. I bought the Polycam pack. I bought some other stuff. And I love all the stuff I've got, but it takes so long to craft stuff that I feel like I've spent enough money on that and I'm looking for the kind of next thing. Which brings me to the other question is that the previous week they launched 5 free-to-play games on Steam as well, including Champions, Spiral Knights, and a couple of others. Spiral Knights is quite popular.
Because it has a TF2 item that you get.
Yeah. Yesterday it was the 5th most played game on Steam.
Yeah.
This is starting to be like that whole St. Elsewhere thing where St. Elsewhere apparently has connections to almost every modern American television show. TF2 is just, everything that anyone ever plays for now is actually technically TF2. Yeah.
So yeah, that's cool.
Well, it seems like, you know, if Valve do something, it legitimizes it. 30 million people in our eyes in the West, in Western anyway. I mean, we've got 30 million people playing Steam. They've got 5-6 free to play games on Steam, and instantly it's a bit like, well, that's not skeezy anymore. It's not dodgy.
The weird thing is, the majority of the people who actually, you know, in our minds, because we play real games in inverted commas, and when you actually see the figures for people who do play free to play games, you always assume, well, people, there must be some tiny community. It's not. It's huge. Ridiculous huge.
How many players does League of Legends have?
They've never said, actually. It's an interesting question. I wouldn't be surprised if they have numbers comparable to World of Warcraft.
Yeah. WoW's like 12 million.
I think the last number they put out was about 12.5 million.
Because what's interesting is how many people now have a TF2 account? 30 million.
This is actually the same for like stuff like just Global Agenda, though, and Spiral Knights.
Right.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, is the infrastructure there to take in all these players? Because if you are server providers now are just going to go, because there's going to be a hell of a lot more people coming in. And that means there's great kind of, in the PC land, we've always just hosted our own stuff.
Yeah.
Well, server providers sell servers, so.
True. Oh, yeah, it's a great business for everyone, I guess.
Yeah. I wonder that, because, like, I mean, TF2 kind of lives on people creating their own little dedicated servers for their community to play on. Most of them are not for-profit things. They're just, like, a community spends some money on the server because it's worth it to have them. Yeah. And now there are 30 million people trying to play.
Yeah.
Where do the servers come from for them?
And I think it may well be quite hard to get a game of TF2 in the next week or two.
I think it'll be horrible as well because it will be full of
LOL noobs.
Yeah.
It would be horrible if you're people to kill.
Yeah, but I think the worst part of it is it's not going to be the people coming into it new. It's going to be people who are disparaging the new people. It's going to be the people who've been there for ages going, oh.
Isn't that you, Rich? Yeah. You just disparaging.
Exactly.
What you should
people
do is,
like me.
So there's like a special level of elite where you're better than the elite.
Exactly. That's the principle of how I base my life on.
So instead of playing it for the next week, just join an idle server and accrue some weapons and then make some.
Does that stuff still work if you just
hang around and you get weapons dropped? That's the whole point of the drop system.
And it still works.
Yeah,
is it counting as cheating? But
the idle servers are brilliant.
The entire business is.
But the idle servers are brilliant because I spent a bunch of time just visiting idle servers.
You spent the time being idle on idle servers.
No, I didn't, because that's the whole point.
Being very active on idle.
Instead of making a map where it's just you dying all the time, the guys get really creative.
Right.
So they're trying to find a creative ways of killing you. So there's one where I joined where I was just on a ramp that was leading up and up and up and up, and then it tips you over into a giant fiery pit.
Awesome.
Another one where it just pushes you off a diving board into a swimming pool.
Oh.
And
that's quite
these
cool,
are giant, elaborate maps just for the purpose of killing people.
I saw a mod yesterday where someone's trying to build an adventure mode for TF2. And it's kind of like a single player campaign in the TF2 setting. Yeah. Just look really cute.
We played a sort of challenge map where there's a different obstacle course for each class, and like engineers have to build dispensers to kind of make ladders for them to climb up onto the ledges and stuff. And scouts have to double jump.
Scouts can triple jump now. Is the free version of TF2, does it include all the maps? And
Yeah, they don't split the community in that way.
There is one thing. Basically, the only difference is that you can't find certain items, like certain items won't drop for you.
Okay.
You get 50 slots in your backpack. The items are standard. You can only craft a limited amount of blueprints. There's no mention here what you can craft yet. The trading, you can only receive items, and you can receive gifts. Whereas the premium players get 300 slots, expandable to 1,000. standard rare and cosmetic items, all blueprints, full trading, and
I just really
want to
play TF2
gifts.
Right now. Yeah, whenever we start talking about it, I just get this kind of urge.
But yeah, all it takes is like a 30 pence purchase for a free player to become a premium player. You can get like a pyro flare gun for 30p, I think.
That's the thing, the first time someone's done that as well, they're like, that was fairly painless, adding things to my Steam wallet, and then that's the slippery slope.
Yeah.
That's what they want.
That's that way leads to bankruptcy.
And it's not just for TF2, like they
and
want
happiness.
They want everyone to play TF2 and to be encouraged to make one tiny purchase on TF2 because that will mean there are TF2 purchases for other games on Steam as well.
Also means they put five quid in the Steam wallet instead of like 30p, so they've got to spend it on something else, might as well spend it on this.
Yeah, what's the minimum you can add to the Steam wallet? I thought there wasn't.
I thought it was like 4 or 5 or something. Remember we asked them that and they said, no, there's you can put as much in as you want, and then the very next day you couldn't just put as much in as you want.
They had their fingers crossed when they
at least they're not being dicks like Microsoft and saying, oh, you can add it in 1,000 point chunks and everything costs 800 points or
and there's a weird ratio between how
are
much
the other games that you so, okay, two questions. First is, why will this work and Quake Live hasn't appeared to have worked? And what other games would you flip to become free?
It apparently, I mean, I'm not heavily involved in the Quake Live scene, but the servers, people have massive problems with them. There are big issues with lag and big issues with cheaters and things like that. I've had people like complain about the way that it's been handled, kind of thrown out into the world and just left to die.
Okay.
So I think
so. Support is the thing that
support seems to be the thing. Yeah,
right. Okay.
That and kind of like just obviousness. I would not know about Quake Live. I did not know about Quake Live.
Quake 3 had its day,
maybe.
Really,
but TF2's had like 3-4 years at it now. It's still
game, Quake 3's what 10 something.
True. I think that one of the issues is that TF2 has the amazing marketing pushes every time they do an update. That
But it's also still continually being developed, whereas Quake 3 is just it's the same game from 10 years ago.
TF2 is still, you know, same size as it was when they were making TF2.
Yeah,
it's a lot more visible as well. You boot Steam up and you see it every day. Whereas, you know, when do you see Quake Live unless you could look for Quake Live?
It's not going to happen. But I guess WoW would be there.
I think WoW will be free in 2 years' time. I really do. I think there'll be a free version, which is the 1-60 thing that they changed in Cataclysm. Buy the expansions, and there'll be lots of vanity items for sale.
I'm wondering if Eve will be.
I think it will be as well.
Because they've got in-game purchase items.
Yeah, they've
like
just put
a monocle or something.
They're
the
really
monocle, like
the
70 quid figure was a little bit kind of reaching for controversy a bit, I thought, because it's not really 70 quid, it's a lot of ISK. And if you want to buy Plex to buy the ISK, then fine. But really, most EVE players by now...
This makes perfect sense to me.
But really, most people have quite a lot of ISK. And if they feel like...
So ISK is Interstellar Credits, which is EVE's, the in-game currency EVE's always had.
Yes.
And Plex is what?
Buy time...
So Plex is game cards, which are then can be converted to ISK for a certain amount. And the exchange rate of Plex to ISK means that the cost in ISK of the monocle is about 70 quid.
Also, you can use your ISK to buy Plex and buy yourself time, so you don't actually have to spend any real money on the game to send your thing.
So Plex and ISK are interchangeable.
But if I'm just subscribed to the game in the normal kind of direct debit way or whatever, I don't have any Plex to spend.
Plex stands for Pilot License Extension or something like that. So basically all you do is buy in your extension as a pilot. So you get just time in the game.
Games have got confusing at some point.
Yeah. I was over in Iceland, they were saying, like, I did ask them whether it would ever go free to play, and their answer at the time was no, because they were saying that they were very...
Well, they'll say no until they say
yes. Yeah, exactly. But then they would say...
That sounded really creepy.
they're never going to say, if you ask someone, is your game going to go free to play? They'll say no, because if they say yes and say, well, I'll stop playing then until it's free.
That's a way to kill sales. It'll be free soon.
It's weird because it is. I mean, from what I understand, everyone that plays it kind of vaguely hardcore just uses Plex anyway. No one really has.
Yeah.
Nobody pays for it. Well, I say no one. A lot of people obviously do pay for it, but the people who play at the top end will use Plex.
You know what the weirdest free to play thing is? Arma 2.
Yeah, that is bizarre. That's just like an extensive demo.
It's a massive demo. But at the same time, it's still...
Because the mission editor comes with it, which is amazing.
Yeah, well, it's got a bunch of stuff, yeah.
We are the most spoiled gamers in the planet.
I know. We want more. Like, sometimes it's really exciting, and then other times you think, God, this is just terrifying. If you're trying to, you know, if you're an indie developer trying to release a game for 10 quid or something, you've got to compete with a million free, incredible,
high-budget
games.
But if you've
got
an amazing, amazing idea, then there must be a way to make it work when it's free. I was looking at, Will Paulser, former editor of Zone, a good friend of ours. He's working with the Project Zomboid guys, and they've got a problem now in that their game's a little bit too good, and it's been leaked, and everyone really, really likes it. So the pirate versions of it are all over the place, and they've had to basically take it down. Buy their fucking game, because it's amazing. But if I was in their position, I'd be looking at ways to just give it away and
sell items.
They kind of said that, didn't they?
Well, right now, what happened was when the pirate version was being updated, it was taking the update from their server and it was killing them.
Basically, because they were having to pay too much for bandwidth because the pirate version was out there.
So they've just given the demo away instead.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing still at the moment that you have, you know, like you say, that this amazing amount of games are there, that if you should want to play free games, you have the chance. And people are still hugely picking up on games like that and games like Terraria, and just immediately kind of the community just moves in.
That brings us to kind of something that's going on at the moment, is that we just take it as a matter of course now that indie games are, like, there are brilliant indie games all the time. Like, I've got my list here, stuff that we really should talk about. It's Jamestown, Terraria, and Frozen Synapse. Terraria is, I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast, we talk about it a lot in the office. The Terraria guy sat down in January, worked for 4 months on a game that he just knew would sell. It sold, it's like the third big, like, most played game.
300,000 copies or something like that.
300,000 copies. And just, it's there, and now that's him set for life.
So I was talking about this the other day, that there's three interesting dudes in this kind of story. There's the guy who made a game called Infiniminer, an online thing about cubes where you can place any block and destroy any block, and it's kind of had sort of multiplayer competitive digging, and it was sort of very, like, sort of tournament-y, and the source code for it got leaked. People developed cheats for it and kind of ruined the game online. The guy said, I'm never making a game like this again. It's stupid. And then there's Notch, who came along and played Infiniminer and thought, this is really cool. I want to make kind of a more survival type thing, like a sort of adventure game where you can place and destroy blocks. And he made Minecraft and made it quite sort of gradually, kept releasing really early alphas. It wasn't really particularly good when he first released it, but it had the random train generation and it was quite cool. And then it just kind of picked up momentum. People made incredible things in it. He kind of rolled with it, and every time something was successful with it, he kind of built on that success and made it more and more successful. And then there's the Infiniminer guys, who after Minecraft became a massive phenomenon, saw it as a massive phenomenon, made something like it in 2D, and that became a massive phenomenon. And you're trying to figure out, like, is the Infiniminer guy a genius for thinking of this first? Is Notch a genius for making it into the incarnation that was really successful? Yeah. Or are the Terraria guys the smartest for building on something they knew would work and making it work?
So anyone who uses blocks to make a game is a genius.
Yeah, pretty much. But all geniuses in different ways. Yeah.
The guy who made Lego many years ago, he's the first genius.
But the non-geniuses in this are the Lego universe people.
Yeah. And I was saying this the other day as well. I spoke to one of the lead guys on Lego universe a few months before it came out, which is not that long ago. And said, so what do you guys think of Minecraft? And he said, what? They literally hadn't heard of it. It wasn't, you know.
It's a game where you craft mates.
To be fair, I think when Lego Universe came out, I don't think it was anywhere near as kind of popular as it is today. We had in the office yesterday the Yogscast guys, who are very cool and fun. But it's amusing because they have the most viewed YouTube channel in the UK, and their most popular videos are Minecraft videos.
Yeah, they just walk around Minecraft.
That is the scale of phenomena that Minecraft is.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I just think it's weird that, you know, I've always thought, people ask questions like, will there be another Minecraft? You think, no, it was a one-off. And then another Minecraft comes along, it looks like Minecraft, and it's another Minecraft. Because it has the same sales figures, it has, well, the same kind of ramping upwards immediately. Yeah. And you think, well, maybe this wasn't a one-off, maybe this is now the model for a good indie game.
There's about 5 years ago at GDC, Saro Iwata stood up, he's the head of Nintendo, and talked about this kind of blue ocean thing about, you know, we're just going to set off and find new ways to play and new interesting ideas, and we'll colonize that and we'll make loads of money. So he did that, and he was dead successful in the Wii. The rest of the industry kind of went, we'll just carry on making games with guns and shoulder pads, and like, that'll be fine. Nintendo just, like, the rest of their life now is just batshit stuff. That's it's just what Nintendo will be doing. But we also have this kind of massive ocean of uncharted stuff on the PC where people can just make stuff.
Yeah.
And that is going to get better and better and better because the distribution is massive. There's very little technical barrier now. The web, like the way you can share information and share ideas so quickly on the web with YouTube and Facebook. Yeah, if anything goes viral, it's just done.
I actually think it's weird the fact that every one of these games that you can kind of see is really good and will do well, there's just a community that just plops itself in there. Where do they come from? It's not that they're leaving other games.
APB Reloaded has a community. it just happens. Yeah. Like Magicka has a community. They all just turn up.
But it's not like there's this one disgruntled mass of like of people who play general games and got bored of that and wanted to play something weird. Every single Minecraft has a community hasn't dipped because Terraria's come out. I mean, no. Maybe a tiny amount, but not.
But like it's just people. If you can capture someone's imagination with an idea or a concept and you can develop that in public, and be open and honest about what's going on, you've got a business and you've got a career for life.
It's awesome because it means the PC doesn't have to appeal to the lowest common denominator. No. I think on consoles, you kind of got a big chunk of people who you have to appeal to. You have to keep making your Gears of War and your Halos. And then when you want to expand it, you have to just appeal to kind of a more general thing. You have to make sort of family party games and try and get mum and dad in on it.
Have to remove the controller, basically.
And on the PC, you can make a nerdier game than anyone's ever made, and it'll be more popular than all the other games because there's just a bunch of nerds out there. everyone can play it because everyone has a PC.
It's talking slightly off topic. I've started playing a Zynga game called Empires and Allies, and I'm boring everyone in the office by constant Facebook spam.
Tim has sent your request in Empires and Allies. He wants you to be on his mansion's personal staff.
Really?
And I started playing it purely out of curiosity because I was trying to figure out why Zynga had put a game out there and it had 30 million players in about 2 weeks. At the top of the game, there's a little kind of Facebook, you know, the like button we have on our site. They've got that. And it was on Tuesday, it was 1.4 million people have liked this. By last night, it was 1.9 million. You got 500,000 likes in 2 days. It's unbelievable, the scale of these games. But the whole point of the game is to constantly tell other people about the game. It's a horrifying pyramid scheme in one way, in that you like the bonuses you get for pulling people in are quite powerful. It's funded by microtransactions and Facebook credits, and there's loads of shit you can buy. But worryingly, it's also kind of fun, and there are decisions to make in it, and there's a little kind of advance warsy thing going on. Yeah, that's a bit worrying.
Kind of fun, though. I mean, like...
No, like, well, no, like, it is fun. And it's, like, I've...
That's a step above.
So I always thought those were just a little bit fun, like, but never enough fun enough for me to even bother with.
It's quite compulsive. It helps that the art's pretty good and that it's got plenty of character. I feel like I'm making decisions already, but I also feel that... Because the main mechanic of it is resource capping you, so you can only make a certain amount of gold or lumber or during the day because it all takes time to accrue, which means that you have to, there's an element of rationing, and that rationing means you make decisions. In Farmville and everything else, that's all they had really was just that rationing bit and you make the decisions. With Empires and Allies, there's like a war metagame thing going on, so you're actually kind of choosing what to build with it, when to attack, how to like trade with your allies and stuff. So it kind of joins all the stuff that made Farmville work to a game that you actually want to play.
I say that's the problem with Farmville. You can never really be good at Farmville. It's not that you say I'm really good at Farmville, whereas you probably could actually use, you know, strategy or your brain to.
And it's not like there's no way like this is, you know, StarCraft 2 level, even Civ level, or even, you know, like very, it's very, very basic strategy, but it's enough for you to be thinking about it and it being taken over.
That's really interesting. I think, like, one of the things that people find objectionable about Farmville and about free-to-play games is both of them give you in-game advantages for things you do out of the game. In terms of spreading the game or paying real money for something. And people just have an inherent sort of distaste for that. I think if you have a policy of you will not ever play a game where it's possible for somebody to pay money or do something out of the game to get an advantage, to get something extra in the game, extra content, then you'll have very little to play in about 5 years' time. I think almost everything is going that way. Even single-player games are doing pre-order DLC that's exclusive, or, you know, retailer-specific DLC, and it's kind of horrible.
I think DSX.
But I think basically that war, the war to like stop that from happening has already been lost. It's definitely happening now everywhere, and it's going to get more prolific.
If there is a fight going on, the consumers, there's not a fight, it's just a decision that retailers are making or asking consumers to make. And the consumers are absolutely choosing that, yes, I would quite like to pay to have an advantage, And B, yes, I would quite like this extra hat if I pre-order the game.
I think it's I'm thinking of is like in consumers' heads, really. It's like, I don't want the game to work like this, but given that it does, yes, I will pay the money to be on the right side of this.
Well, of course I want to win.
The Deus Ex Human Revolution pre-order, or the special edition, I think it is, gives your in-game character in a single-player game 10,000 extra credits to spend.
And remote-controlled explosives, that sounds, and the double-barrel shotgun, and a silent sniper rifle, and a lockpick.
That sounds gameplay.
It's quite... I mean, obviously the Battlefield 3 thing, with the Battlefield 3 pre-order DLC came out, the details of that came out, and then the internet, kind of led by Reddit, railed against that, and then the response by EA was to change that, was to remove the squad. Yeah,
they didn't backtrack, they just clarify that, oh, this is a time-based exclusive, we're going to get it to you all eventually anyway. So I think they didn't change their policy,
same thing happened with Just Cause 2.
Yeah, I think like with a free-to-play thing, they wouldn't have voluntarily announced it ahead of time saying, hey, this thing you can pay for, you're going to get that free eventually, but they were kind of forced to by public opinion.
That kind of fight, it was kind of greeted on Reddit as, oh wow, we finally beat them. It feels like the very last fight back in the marketing.
Like that's
and now
horrible.
You look like the heroes, and
we deign to let you have this.
that does bring up something else. Actually, is it's been a crazy couple of weeks for PC gaming. Actually, EA have a Steam competitor, called Origin.
It's weird to me because I've been a begrudging user of all of EA's online distribution things for the last couple of 6 years.
Whenever a review comes out and it's got EA download, we'll give it to Tom.
Because I actually do have an account and I have got it to work on like a couple of different occasions. And so to me, this doesn't seem like news at all. It's like, you know, the EA Downloader wasn't really news. EA Download Manager wasn't really news. EA Link, I think it was called for a while, wasn't really news. And then they went back to calling it EA Download Manager, and then they renamed it to Origin, and now it's
EA
a deal.
Store in the middle of that as well, I think.
EA Store, yeah.
So is it not like completely remade though, rather than...
I think
it's a service now.
It's like, to be fair, actually, it's pretty good. It does a lot of cool stuff. So I think what's happening is EA need to own. It doesn't make. This is my pure speculation. So I don't want anyone to go. This like Edge for PC Gamer says this is why EA are doing this.
You're about to, though, aren't you?
But this is what I think is going.
the Edge for PC Gamer, I think.
It makes no sense if EA can provide a download service. To give Valve or any other digital retailer your pre-orders. It just doesn't. If the place you can pre-order from is EA, EA gets to keep all the money. Hmm. Rather than giving the cut of what I think is probably about 30% to a digital retailer. If they've got their own pre-orders, Origin as a pre-order service, they get loads of money. The second point is that in Star Wars The Old Republic, EA have a Half-Life 2 level opportunity to create a download service.
That's the ace
like list. What Valve did with Half-Life 2 and Steam.
On the other hand, they also have a multi-million dollar game thing that they've invested masses and masses in that they could scupper by giving it... Like, you only need just a little bit of a small disadvantage to your MMO for it not to hit that critical mass where it's going to spread to the whole world.
Yes. I reckon The Old Republic is probably the highest... most pre-ordered game in history. And I also reckon that... Well, no, they've said publicly that The Old Republic, you'll be able to buy it from Origin online, and that's where you'll buy it from, unless you buy it in a box and from the store, and then it'll just be like a normal game.
Yeah, I think it's a way to kind of work out whether it is, because, you know, looking back at Half-Life 2 and Steam and kind of Counter-Strike that era, even then, Steam for me was seen as, oh, this is unnecessary. Yeah. I assume Origin will be like that to a lot of people. Like, I want to play this game. This comes a part of it. Oh, fine.
I think
I'll just deal with it.
It's going to be a difficult year for the digital retailers because we're in weird situations now. Brink isn't for sale in the UK, and nor is Hunted, as far as I know, on Steam. It's for sale on Direct Drive and a bunch of other retailers, but for some reason in the UK, Steam aren't selling it. You can speculate all you like as to why that is, but the fact is that the business people have decided that Steam customers are not allowed to buy Brink. That's despite the fact, actually, which this is a rant that just drives me potty. If you buy Brink, you get a Steam code.
Yeah. It was also pre-orderable. It's just when it came out, they decided we're not selling it anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
It
doesn't make any sense to anyone, anywhere about what is going on, aside from the two suits that are arguing about this. Yeah. And it pisses me off a bit, actually, because I've got a bunch of friends at Splash Damage who just like they shrug their shoulders and go, I don't know what's happening either.
No.
But so this next year, there's going to be a lot of that stuff going on as the market comes to terms with not just one monstrously powerful digital retailer working, but lots of little digital distributors, digital retailers working, one massive one, and a bunch of their own retail stores going at the same time. If you want to buy an EA game, I reckon that if you want to pre-order an EA game now, you will probably end up pre-ordering it on Origin. If you want to play it on day one, or you go to the store and buy it.
Yeah, I think they've kind of shown that they're not afraid of making things exclusive to it. They're perfectly within their rights to do it. I think the reason it's scary is that
it's really fiddly for us.
They own a lot of good people who make games we love.
I mean, Battlefield and Tor this year, that's a huge opportunity for EA to take back pre-orders themselves.
And Mass Effect as well at the beginning of next year.
Yeah. I don't begrudge them doing it. I'm just a bit sad because I like seeing my games in one big list.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't want two things in your system tray, don't you?
you just add Origin to your Steam launch thing.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Steam app Origin.
So, as readers, I'm really curious as to listen to what you think of this stuff, because I think you probably got some of the same opinions to us, but you might feel a little bit different about it.
Yeah, I think the two questions are like, A, does it piss you off, and B, is it okay for EA to do it? Like, because for me, it pisses me off, but I see that it's fair enough.
Also, C, if the answer to those questions are yes, it pisses me off, and no, it's not okay, are you still going to buy Battlefield anyway? Yeah. Like, that's
as a gamer, I have a strict rule that I will never make a stand on anything or sacrifice in any way. Always follow my principles to get a new game.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, anyone else doing it wouldn't really be news, but the fact that they have got such a slate this year of games that people will, like, Tor is such a massive thing. I think the weird thing as well, the fact that Steam now is so ubiquitous that we're almost incredulous that someone wouldn't sell the games on Steam. You know, why would you ever do that? Why would you ever not sell it on the shop?
Yeah. That brings us to E3, actually, where EA basically ruled the show.
It wasn't Microsoft, was it?
It wasn't Microsoft. It wasn't Sony. Nintendo had very long queues to play their kind of tablet thing that it's much smaller in real, like, I walked past the Nintendo thing a bunch of times, so I got to see it.
The Wii U.
Like, their tablet, I thought it was like iPad size and the rest of it, but it's like the screen's pretty small and it's got two thumbsticks and triggers and shit. It just looks mental.
And it's only one per console as well. It looks like a 1980s Hasbro game thing.
Honestly, it looks like when people used to kind of, in old games magazines, in the 90s, people used to like design what the next person would look like. And it looked like a mock-up someone had drawn on the desk.
Yeah, it does look like a T3 like mock-up of what. But right now,
it's a box with sticks, I guess.
But right now, you can only use one per console. That's what that's just...
So the way this is
a terrible job of explaining it. I talked to Matt Castle and Gamer about it. And he just completely sold me on it in, like, you know, 15 minutes of just explaining what kind of games he could actually use it for.
He's an exuberant chap.
The point is, it's a DS for your living room. Because it's just like you have a screen on your telly and you have a screen in your hands and all the DS stuff works.
It's the only platform I can think that could theoretically have cross-platform games with both the iPhone and the Xbox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. But anyway, PC games.
That's PC. E3.
A lot of people came away quite disappointed from E3 because there wasn't like a big platform. Like, Nintendo showed their thing, but no one really understood it. Microsoft showed a lot of terrible Kinect games.
Yeah.
And Sony just kind of spent most of their conference apologising for...
There were some of the things in the Microsoft conference were kind of terrible, and then just most of it just seemed like it wasn't for us. It was just, here's what some family should probably be excited about.
I mean, I've got a kid coming, and I'm quite excited by a Sesame Street game.
Family.
Like, cool Sesame Street games I can play with my child when he grows up. That's nice. It's nice to have that stuff.
It's Tim Schafer one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Tim Schafer making it.
I suppose it's the feeling that that's all they had. Like, they didn't have anything for the...
They had a thing where you can make Kinect games with the PC, though.
Yeah.
Haven't they released the SDK now for PC?
That is out now, yeah.
That's fairly under the radar, and that could be amazing. But, I mean, the stuff made is already incredible.
And Halo 4.
The thing that happened is that the third parties showed up and they all had really good games.
And a truck of games in the back.
Battlefield 3 looks brilliant. plays really well. Mass Effect is going to be great.
BioShock.
BioShock looked amazing.
That was weird because at the beginning of the show, no one really cared about it.
So 2K had BioShock, XCOM. Darkness looks all right. XCOM looked pretty good.
It's a little bit changed. I'm a bit worried about the Gennaro shooty men there.
Well, it's Brothers in Arms is the best way to look at it, but it also has a kind of management bit back at base. Mm. And the question is the management stuff deep enough to make a difference on the shooty bit? And is the XCOM lives or dies on the intersection between management and the action phases? And if they've managed to capture an FPS and some really nice base management, then yeah, that'd be a great game.
Yeah, it's that kind of feeling like what you did at home has an effect on the field.
Yeah, it's the total war effect, basically.
I think it just needs to not have too much shooting, or for like say the kind of the weird devices that you research back at base to kind of make the shooting not as important.
Yeah.
So one of the screenshots we've seen is something that you guys saw in the demo at E3 where one of your dudes has this kind of like electronic backpack thingy that creates a shield around him, and it seems like almost like a sort of TF2.
It's like a cover device system thing, like a portable cover system thing. Right.
I think the BioShock stuff we saw, did that not explain what Infinite meant? Or
so the BioShock stuff, they had a series of there's a bit in the demo where portals open and you go into different universes or alternate universes, excuse me. I guess that's where the Infinite bit comes.
It's different universes every time, though. Isn't the game layered upon like 100 other universes?
I don't know.
Ken Levine was saying that it's like in the same way that Tenenbaum was using kind of Adam and the sci-fi stuff in BioShock to fuck with genetics. Elizabeth in BioShock Infinite is kind of using the magic-y stuff to subvert like quantum physics,
and it's not even, and that's not even the one gimmick they have. They have so many gimmicks in that game.
But the thing about BioShock Infinite is that yes, it all has all these crazy ideas, but actually, it's just really entertaining.
Yeah.
And I think that's my fear about BioShock Infinite is it like people go ooh and just talk about that stuff, but like the characterization of Elizabeth and Booker is just really fun. It's got that kind of Indiana Jones, Marion Ravenwood thing going on. It's just awesome.
And the movement, the Skyhook stuff just looks astonishing.
It just looks like a great adventure.
Did you see any bits where a bunch of different tears, like three different tears appeared, all showing different possibilities, and Elizabeth asked you to choose which one you wanted her to bring in?
Yes.
Okay. I just saw that on a video last night, and the tear stuff kind of looked interesting when it was just weird things shimmering in and out of existence as a kind of sort of this threat behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, something weird's going to happen with this. But the bit I saw just looked like sort of choose your own adventure book. Like, do you want the cart or the skyline or this weapon? Point to one and press B to make Elizabeth make it happen.
Well, Graham was saying that it's very much just like in Call of Duty in a lot of ways, in the way that not in a bad way.
Oh, God.
It's a straight line.
Yeah, exactly. If it's a really good gun game when it's just really entertaining, it's done everything it needs to.
Hmm. He was saying that, obviously with the Skyhooks, it is a literal roller coaster most of the game. It was so much light and sound and so well choreographed. And he said that he was saying that if he's ever going to play a really linear shooter, he wants it to be set in this incredible
world. To play a linear shooter that's as good as Half-Life 2?
Yes.
It's a loaded question.
That's BioShock Infinite.
Are they saying that, though? Because what they're showing in those videos is a guy does a series of very specific things in which it's made it look like he could have done anything else. Like he's standing on a platform, he hops on one of like six different skylines and goes to an island that's miles away from the others. It looks like he could have got onto any of those skylines or gone to any of these places and, you know, explored all these different buildings. It looks open world, but everything they're showing seems to depend on the player.
That's the problem they're having. I think they have to do that. I think you're right, and that's what you described as how the game actually plays, but they have to show this really sort of tight, exciting action game because they've got 15 minutes to grab your attention. And when you come away from it, you're like, you know, if that game does look like that's how it plays, I'll be perfectly happy.
Yeah, so, I mean, the linear shooter and then a world as amazing as that is fine.
The little 1.5 minute trailer they released was just like the most exciting thing about E3 for me.
Skyrim.
Da-da-da.
just has incredibly muscly horses.
Yeah, oh, they're chunky, aren't they?
They are really, really muscly.
It's disconcertingly chunky.
Every time I look, like, so
freaky. Yeah,
so I don't know what they're kind just of feeding them in there, kind of like. But those horses are full of oats.
They were on the fence about whether to do horses at all. Well, if we're going to do them, they're going to be like 1 meter thick.
I was thinking the other day, because obviously the dragon shouts are the way you can kind of attack people, but I love the there's a comic about it I saw the other day, but I love the idea of just kind of a dragon running towards you and just going, just fuck off. And
then killing it's like the dragon's roar is fuck you, and your dragon shouts fuck you too.
That game looks quite rugged. The thing I worry about is that mountains and open world games are always shit.
That's my experience with mountains.
I remember playing Armor in Operation Flashpoint, where you have like a very like steep slope, and what you do is you walk sideways
Covered at an angle
until you can't go any further, and then you jump up and down a little bit.
That's Morrowind for me. I spent all Morrowind doing that.
Trying to get the perfect angle to get up the hill,
and then I leveled up in acrobatics.
So I imagine Skyrim is going to be great, but I am worried that I'm going to spend all my time running parallel to a mountain to try and get to the top.
I mean, getting to the top of the mountains is more important than saving the world to me.
Exactly.
I want that view.
If you see a peak, that's where you're going. There's just no question about it.
So I was playing Armor 2 with Owen, and he was filming me. I wasn't aware of this at the time, but I tried to. The only way I could get up a hill was to lie down on my belly and then roll.
like in real life.
Yeah. But so, full pack on, just rolling slowly up the hill. I got to the top. It was quite good.
But the alternative is doing like a Quop style mini game where you're. But then it comes like a.
Oh, like
grip.
Yeah, grip.
That game's amazing.
It's going to be awesome. The combat they showed at E3 surprised me by not being very different to Oblivion. Yeah.
It's kind of wave your waist in someone's face and then they fall down and stuff.
Yeah. I had hopes of it being like, you know, totally dynamic.
I think for console players, the interface is probably better because of the way
I don't really care about the controls, but there's a moment where he slashes someone's throat and the guy doesn't even twitch. Like, there's no reaction at all, which is true in Oblivion too. Like, if you happen to hit them at the right time with the right kind of blow and they're ready to do the animation, then they'll do the animation. But most of the time, it's just you swish a sword and some blood comes out, but nothing else happens.
I'm most excited about because I only really play archers in these kind of games, so I'm excited about the bows. Yeah. Like, the way the bows actually do twang into people.
The combat being shit is... Use bows.
Or use magic and just backpedal around it.
I'm happy with that if they have balanced the hit points so that you don't end up fighting these juggernaut tanks as soon as you get to like level 15. Because from level 15 onwards in Oblivion, everything was so tough that there really wasn't any other way to take it down except with close combat. Like, you had to keep hitting them with an axe even if you're going to be a mage.
Yeah.
That's not entirely true. But
Prey looked very good as well.
That's a weird
Prey
one.
Two. Yeah. Prey 2.
That's one that I'm generally quite excited about.
Killian McHunt or something.
Look, really,
that was a fuck hunt.
That's an unfortunate second name there.
Okay,
I don't know his surname, but I know his first name is Killian. Like, he's a bounty hunter, so I'm sure his surname is going to be something like, you know, Stormcloud or Starkiller.
It's exciting game. The fact that it's open world city where you are now an alien bounty. I mean, obviously,
open world city, Mirror's Edge style running, bounty hunters, aliens in sweaters.
There's too much chasing. It's just like, I hate games where the person I have to attack is running away all the time.
Oh, he's also, here we go.
Yeah. Remember the bits when I played Assassin's Creed Brotherhood? I would let one of the beggars would always try and take my wallet, and I'd chase after him, attack him to the floor, and then he'd go, oh, I'm so sorry, here's your thing back. And I'd let him go, and I'd chase him, tackle him to the floor again, and I'd let him get 3 or 4 steps. I'd do this for about 20 minutes. Let this one beggar get away and just tackle him slowly. Just tackle him slightly again on the floor.
I would just stab them and throw him off a belt.
Assassin's Creed 2, there's a bit where you need to make friends with a thief, and he runs off, and you have to catch him, like, to prove yourself. And if you fall up too far behind, he kind of waits, and then if you catch up with him a bit, then he goes faster and stuff. It's all just rubber banded so that you can't kind of catch him too soon, or you can't fail it. And it was just a complete nightmare. I just hate it. It's sort of one of the worst things in gaming, that kind of scene. As soon as I completed it, you get a little cutscene, a conversation, and then you go out into the city. And the first thing that happened when I went out into the city is a thief stole some money off me and then ran across the rooftops. And so I gave chase. I wanted my money back. And it was exactly the same kind of mechanics, except that there was no rubber banding. This guy could get away, could very well run off with my money, and that the game would carry on. or I could catch him and get my money back anytime, just depending on how good I was at it. And it's one of the best experiences of early gaming. It's the exact same scene. There's a guy I'm chasing. I'm trying to get something back off him.
What did you think?
Just because it could succeed or it could fail. I mean, it was superb.
There's a chase bit in Mirror's Edge, isn't there, where you're going after the spiky haired dude.
Yeah, there are a few. And you're kind of scripted to fall.
If I'm chasing someone in a game and I've got a gun, if I could wing him or something to shoot him in the leg and just slow him down, I'd be quite happy if Prey allows that. But it doesn't seem to be that it just seems to be that the chase sequences seem to be slightly prescribed.
Prototype, you chase this thing across the whole city and fall too far behind, the mission fails, keeps on failing, mission, and then you catch up with him. And there's a big boss fight, and he just gets away. And then it carries on. Well, why does it carry on this time? He got away 19 other times.
Yeah. I mean, GTA has some terrible chase stuff.
Even more recently, LA Noire is just like, oh, you're running away again, are you?
And that's the whole game of Prey 2.
the Mirror's Edge.
But it'll be great, don't worry.
The Mirror's Edge bit that I always remember is being chased by those three, the punchy cops. And just the ability to not turn around.
The case of the three punchy cops.
Exactly. But that was genuine. I remember my heart going boom, 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 because it's terrifying. You can't look behind you. You don't know. These people will kick the shit out of you if they catch you, and you just have to actually run
really
away.
There's a chase bit in Half-Life 2 as well. Like the opening of Half-Life 2 is
when you're being shot at. Yeah. But I mean, the bit in Mirror's Edge, that's just, it's not kind of a scripted chase where you're trying to catch, in fact, both those things are you're running away rather than you're trying to catch
someone. I really like it. Like running away has the mentality. You very rarely run away from stuff in games. There's one bit in Condemned 2 where you're in a shack and this bear appears, this evil bear.
But that was unexpected.
But it's this kind of, like, the bear's gone evil, but it's basically like QTEs, but you end up with this situation where you're actually going, shit, the bear's going to fuck me up if it catches me. I better hide behind this wall. Oh, God. I am actually quite, like, you run down a hallway. It's like a bit in Call of Cthulhu.
I think amnesia is based on that whole principle as well, being scared by things. But the problem was, I wasn't scared by amnesia, so I was just kind of walking through the thing going, nah, you're not
scared by amnesia, but I couldn't find my way around. I just got stuck. I was like, around a loop. I didn't know where to go next. So it was like, I'm simultaneously terrified and bored.
I've got a random question from E3. You got kidnapped?
Yeah, I got kidnapped by a helicopter. Well, not by a helicopter.
Oh, you're mine now.
My kidnappers took me by helicopter to a beach resort.
Where they had opera singer singing Ave Maria.
This is the worst
Which
kidnapping
ever. Which
I
terribly named on the live blog. The Hitman tune.
Oh, brilliant.
Well, it was money.
In which a commenter was absolutely fairly going, you absolute finished guy. Sorry.
There is a generation.
I'm in a helicopter.
There's a generation for whom Ave Maria is the Hitman menu music. Yeah. I'm okay with that.
There's new Hitman announced, and to announce it, they Square Enix asked to meet us, who's me and Tim Ingham, who's the editor of CVG, in the lobby of the hotel we're staying at 2 days before E3. And we got picked up by a limo with a guy in a black suit and earpiece who kind of handed us a manila envelope with a bunch of newspaper cuttings about
murders. Did he cut his throat and take his clothes?
Yes, yeah, so we cut his throat, took his clothes, stole a helicopter. I went to a beach resort. And that was my E3.
If you are like a super secret spy trying to kidnap people, and you ever want to kidnap a game journalist, all you do is just tell them to be down the lobby and have a limo, and you don't let them get in the car.
Luckily, no one cares about us.
Yeah, exactly.
It was quite an exciting moment because when we landed, we got put into jeeps and then driven to this ultimate.
So, necessary.
Yeah.
it was a very exciting experience. I'm not entirely sure that they got the best value out of it. However, there was the place we were was a place called Catalina Island, which is off Los Angeles, and it's just where people go to get drunk on the beach. But because it's a holiday resort, it just has loads of really wicked shit, and people drive around in golf carts, and I think the entire island was drunk driving this golf cart. But as we were walking to the beach, there was a moment of sheer lunacy where there was a submarine stationed by the beach, and we were walking directly towards it, and I just went, this is Planes, Trains and Automobiles. But we didn't go on the submarine, we saw Hitman, and Hitman looks all right.
I was about to ask about Hitman. Yep. That was my segue of getting in at Hitman.
Hitman is interesting because I think they've had the same discussions that Ubisoft had around Splinter Cell, which is, how do I make a stealth game exciting and relevant to the people who like pressing A a lot?
That's a depressing question.
Yeah.
It's simple. You make Deus Ex Human Revolution because that worked really well. The stealth works really nicely. Awesome.
I don't think it's necessarily as stupid as I've made it out to be, but it's like
it's more up.
People who like pressing A a lot is the best derogatory term for console gamers ever.
Oh, I like this.
The stuff they showed was a lot more actiony. They didn't really get to the stuff I and you like about Hitman, which is looking at a system of an entire place, how that system fits together,
and sticking a knife in it.
Yeah, finding the place where you stick the chisel in, and just
you made an interesting point, Tom, about
neck. I find it's best to stick the chisel in.
You made an interesting point about the like. If you look at Hitman Blood Money's first level and the demo, you look at that and you say, this game's really prescribed and terrible. What's the point of playing this? And then it opens out. I mean, I could easily see them going, hey, yeah, this would be really good to show this level.
Yeah.
Doing the same thing.
That was kind of the common theme throughout E3 for me. It was like, well, that's a bit annoying, but that might just be the demo and not game. Like there's so many games made by awesome people who know the value of open-ended levels who showed very linear demos.
I would actually stop announcing games at E3 if I was king of the world, because you're trying to fight with a press conference from Microsoft that they spend like $50 or $100 million on, which is just insane, and you can't. But also, you are competing with all the other games in the show, and it's a really difficult way to see games. It's a great way to meet people who are making games, and you get loads of cool stuff out of it, but I think the best way to launch games is just put a 5-minute video of amazing stuff on the internet, and then also put a 45-minute video on the internet of this is the really deep stuff, and then just explain it out.
Don't you mean the best way to launch games is to come to PC Gamer and give us the
system? Yeah, that's the other way I'd do it.
The only thing I was saying about Batman was I just wanted to change the inventory and that's all. The rest I can just have blood money over and over again. But I don't mind them adding action stuff to it, because I can't see them taking away from the other stuff. I can just see them adding to it.
Well, the interesting point as well, I'd forgotten just how clunky he is in Blood Money.
It's an incredibly clunky game.
This is the kind of crazy mannequin man.
Yeah.
But the whole the entire inventory is really clunky. The way you select your weapons is horrible in Hitman. They just need to sort that stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, I want him to be. If he's, I'm not asking him to be like Sam Fisher crawling on pipes and ceiling, but I want him to be able to not feel like he's just kind of got something up his ass the entire time.
Yeah, I'm cool with all the like acrobatic stuff in terms of being able to climb over the scenery a bit more is really good. Being able to hug cover, I'm skeptical because all cover systems suck except for Rainbow Six and Deus Ex. But if it works, then great. But the trailer they showed, the CGI trailer, where he just walks into a building and just punches everybody to get to his target.
I hope
you realise that isn't Hitman in any sense.
He's hit a man.
That's man hit, not Hitman.
The problem I have with Hitman is that if you are not involved in Hitman land, externally looks like a really serious, dark, gritty game.
Yeah.
But it's hilarious and funny, and like there is this kind of grim brutality to it that is offset by ludicrous humour. And I just think that the stuff that I really like is stuff that makes me laugh.
I'm poisoning a sausage and throwing it to a dog.
Well, it's Hitman humour is really interesting because it's sort of dark humour, but not in terms of like, oh, something horrible happened and it's funny. Yeah. It's, well, that does happen. But it's like the Hitman dressed in a bird costume.
Yeah.
It's something that if you see it in a screenshot, it makes you laugh. When I'm playing it, there's not a smile on my face at all. It's like, it's entertaining me in this really subtle way, but it's just like, I look completely ridiculous and I'm about to murder somebody.
But like, that's the thing is that I don't think the stuff that, like all the dark and gritty trailers and stuff, get across the entertainment of Hitman.
Yeah. Well, the film didn't either. The film had a so po-faced kind of approach to it. This, like you say, this game saying, hey, we've got this really important mission for you, dress up as Santa and poison a man.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute, dress up as who? Poison the man, it's fine.
And the only kind of Hitman art that I really, really loved, there was a piece of, like there was just a guy, the art was from the guy's perspective who's about to be murdered. He's in a bath, you can see his knees. There's a rubber duck covering his, because you can see his body, you can't see his face because you're seeing from his eyes. There's a rubber duck just between his legs at the kind of water level, and this Hitman kind of standing over him with a toaster. And it's, that's It's so good. It's so funny.
Bad for the duck.
Well, yeah, I mean, the duck's going to get it. But everything else is like so dark and so gritty. I like happy death is.
I mean, that is probably the most difficult humor to actually get across. I mean, like Tom said, you can't even explain how it makes it feel, but should explain that to people playing the game.
I guess you know, when every trailer I saw of E3 was cut like it was from the guy who started, who made the credits of Seven.
Yeah.
It's a little scratchy noise. It's really, you can't, I mean, putting a Hitman trailer out where it's just like, and then you drop a piano on someone's head. I guess when you look at what everyone else is doing and what everyone else is getting excited over.
Right. I think that Hitman is incredibly marketable, and I think that the thing I enjoy most about it is not really the humour. It doesn't have to be wacky. It's something that's really sinister and professional and kind of sexy and cool. I mean, it's, you know, being a professional hitman.
It's got an amazing look to it.
All my like favorite runs through Hitman, I mean, sometimes, you know, you fuck it up and there's improvisational stuff and it's kind of funny, but a lot of my favorite runs are just doing something absolutely perfectly and with incredible precision and just, you know, packing up a sniper rifle onto a suitcase and walking out the front door with everyone completely ignoring you. And you could definitely make a trailer that showed that had mass market appeal.
The next one. I mean, it makes sense if the next one was kind of focused on that. I mean, that was the very first kind of announcement as well. I think we may be pinning too much.
The game did look really good, and there was some fucking brilliant stuff in there. Like, when Hitman is leaving this building that he's in, it basically is the last scenes of Leon. He's walking out, and as he goes out, there's like dozens and dozens of police officers coming up the stairs. There's loads of people on screen, and they're all kind of banging on doors to kind of, because he's escaped them. But he's in a SWAT officer's, I don't say costume, uniform. Dancing costume. And like you can see them like look at him, but he just goes, like, it goes to slow motion for a moment. He just goes, like, looks to one side and puts his hand up a little bit.
That's how I look inconspicuous. Yeah.
And, like, that sounds dead suspicious. Don't look at me. It looked very cool. And he goes downstairs and, like, it just feels very placed and very well thought out and very, very, very exciting.
And before that, he killed someone with a bong.
And before that, he just killed someone with a bong. So maybe
I think,
I like the idea as well. Isn't there... Reading the previews, there's the ability to, like, when he walks out the front door and he gets looked at again, he goes to a box of donuts and starts fiddling with them.
But eats a stealth donut.
But the donuts are.
Pulls the donut in front of his face.
It's supposed to be this kind of place. You
can't see my eye.
Who's that? Oh, it's just donut face.
Look at my goggles.
They're the glasses, then you draw the fake moustache on them.
It, man, just looks
fake
like Elton John.
A chocolate bar.
He conspicuously wanders out.
The Hitman wouldn't look like this.
Anyway, the donuts.
So back to the donuts.
But they seem to be these places you can stand forever.
No. So what happened is the final exit to the building that he's in is blocked by like 12 or 15 riot police, and they're all kind of and there's no way around him. But there's a box of donuts.
We'll stop anyone not eating a donut.
Places them one by one. So enter a woodchipper.
He just kind of lays them down and little kind of
on a string.
It's like the money with the guards in Assassin's Creed, where you can throw some coins to distract the guards. Just throw some donuts at cops.
Donuts.
Throw all the kind
of. It's getting there, isn't it?
No, but what happens is that a cop on the other side of the room recognises him and just starts talking at. Hitman. Does Hitman have a first name?
No. Agent. No. Name 47.
Yeah.
So he uses the full name Tobias Reaper.
Okay. So Dave Hitman is being talked at by a cop, and
you say the cop recognizes him. Presumably the cop doesn't recognize him.
Well, he's got donuts on his eyes.
It's donut guy. Do that thing you do with the donuts.
Donut glasses.
No. So he says, like, he thinks he recognizes him from a previous thing, and I think like the joke is that he probably used to work at another police thing where Hitman was disguised as a cop.
Wow, that's
always the worst cop in history. That
And so Hitman,
where he befriended that cop.
Hitman never looks at him. He's always got his back turned, and the cop's behind him.
The thing on the back of his neck, then.
Yeah, but he's got a hat on.
Okay.
and they talk. He talks at him for a little bit, and while he's eating his donuts, going om nom nom om nom nom, which actually is very buff for the amount of donuts he probably gets through in this kind of situation. The cops kind of get called to their duties and run up the stairs, go om nom 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 nom, and
he's like,
"Hey, door, brilliant," and walks out. So it's a bit like,
is it just an excuse to not have his face facing them?
Kind of, yeah. So donut is a trigger for the cops to leave.
What? I don't want donuts to be a trigger for cops to leave.
I'm not sure donuts to be a delicious treat.
But I imagine there are other ways out that you just have to think about, but it seemed like a funny thing to demo at the time. If you try and think about it too hard, it doesn't work. Yeah. It suggests it's just like
a lot of hat moments like that, though, which is facile. That worked for...
The thing I liked about that in Blood Money, they started to make poisoning as an actual game system rather than like prescriptive thing. It was like any item of food you can inject with poison, even if it's never going to get eaten. It was just a rule that if it's food or drink, you can poison it.
Yeah.
And then some people did, you know, eat from a box of donuts or sip some coffee. So you just, you know, observe people and then figure out what to do.
I love poisoning people.
Yep. I like, there's a cake that you can both poison and put a bomb in and then serve it to somebody and then kill them while they're eating it.
You'll never get to try my delicious poison bomb cake.
And then you can blow up the bomb.
That was a good game.
Well, if you kill anyone in Hitman,
you do
obviously, what happens to the bodies?
What do you mean?
You get this theater
during the mission or after?
During the mission.
Blood Money just hung around.
So there's no.
Oh, well, actually, if a security guard finds them, they will, like, if it's a cop or an official, they will put them in a body bag and drag them to the security room. And if there's something on their body that you need, then you have to get to the security room and take it off there.
So in that situation, you could feed them a poisoned bomb cake.
I don't think they ever eat the bomb. The bomb's quite large.
God, this cake is really filling.
And it's really chewy as well.
So I'm thinking, like,
it's about the size of a landmine.
Yeah. Will it fit in a sandwich? Will it fit in a donut? A
cup of coffee. Just put it in.
Basically, no.
Okay.
It's cakes only.
Cakes only.
Specifically
if
for mine.
If you start eating
cakes.
The bomb cake, is it just that's triggered for the bomb? I can't remember.
I never let him get all the way through. A, it was poison, so he's probably going to pass out. And B, I was cutting his throat at the time.
Yeah, I think I did. I just stood above him because you'd see down into the thing. I just stood above him and just went like that. Yeah.
I just think like it'd be cake. Cool if like ambulance showed up. Like, and they had a system of like put the man onto the trolley.
One of my favorite things I did was in Heaven and Hell mission. You're trying to get into a party that your entrance is either through the lobby or through a parking garage, and there's guards watching the parking garage, and there's two of them, so you can't easily get behind one and throttle him. But I just stood out of vision of the window and threw a bomb past him, just past the window, and they just see an object, and so the one who's standing up goes out to pick it up. Find out what it is. You could blow it up then, but obviously it would alert everybody. So I just let him pick it up, and he takes it off to the security room, which is somewhere else. So that's when I assassinated his friend in the chair, just throttled him, and then waited for the other guy to get to the security room where all the other cops are, and then detonated it.
That's cruel.
That is mean.
Yep. But it's just awesome that is that, like, if they just see an object, they'll go to the object, and if it's a suspicious object, they'll pick it up and take it to the security room, and then just use that rule.
Like
that
systemic stuff is really, like, that's the stuff that's amazing about this game, isn't it?
Because that was a problem that, like, I couldn't see a way past, and I just had to think about, you know, lines of sight and AI rules and all that kind of stuff. That's what I really like.
So I guess the last thing to talk about is our giant SOPCOM match, which was good.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
We are kind of trying to have regular game nights on the mag because we all like playing together, and we have a network that we should use. Yeah. It's like living at a university house, except it's a job. And that was good.
SOPCOM 1, not SOPCOM 2 as well.
Yeah, so I got back into SOPCOM in a big way like last year. And suddenly, like, I just figured out how to play it. And as soon as you kind of master the economy, it becomes much, much better than when you're just struggling with it. And just realized how absolutely incredible it is and how it just hasn't been surpassed by anything. So I've been trying to persuade people to play it with me.
So the only way to do it was to get to find seven copies of Forge Alliance.
Yeah.
And
we finally, playing it online is a real nightmare these days.
Far forward, I mean, just the amount of trials that we had to jump through to get it, even working for two of us.
UDP and TCP/IP shit. But then, we just realized, hey, we've got like 8 gaming PCs networked in the office, and the LAN play is just like LAN games back in the day when games actually worked on LANs. Just don't give a shit. It's like they can all be the same CD key if you like. You won't notice. You don't have to create an account. If you buy Forge Alliance, you don't need the main game to play as the main races, so you can play as all 4 races just with the expansion.
And it just worked. We had seven people in a game. The reason it was seven is because you can only have eight players in a game total. That's like the most maps are made for. And we needed an enemy. We wanted to be co-op. So we just had seven of us versus one AI and used two mods. One is Saurian AI, which is Saurian is a guy who made AI mods for SOCOM that were so good that Gaspard hired him to make the AI for SOCOM 2. And then one that lets you give the AI even more cheating advantages so they can build stuff faster and get resources faster. But by default, the game goes up to like 200%, and versus seven humans, you need a bit more than that. So we set him on 600% of each, which is the most you can ever do. And within 13 minutes, he had an experimental out. I think it was a Soul Ripper.
We had six factories up in the first 30 seconds.
Because at the start of the game, everyone just there's this very kind of...
it's almost calm,
different options to how you set up your base. So most of us build a factory first, then it's whether you want to build mass extractors first or power generators, and you kind of slowly build it up. And as you're doing this, you keep flicking back to the enemy base, and he's got like four factories. Now he's got six factories. Now he's got shielding. Now he's building experimental. He's got a tech-free power generator.
It's a proper kind of, oh, that's a bit freaky. Like it is like what you imagine Skynet is, but taking place.
That's why it's so awesome, because it's like we had such a huge numbers advantage. Seven people is ridiculous. Like I can't think of another time I've ever played seven. Like an RTS where there's six other generals on my side, and it's just great that the AI is just this terrifying thing. There's only one of him, but he can just spread.
If we do it again, we shouldn't do a map. The problem I think we had was the map was a big circle, but if there's a way we could find a map that is just one guy over there, and then there's like the group of us
all hiding,
I don't think there are any like that.
Okay,
it's worth saying as well. Yeah, this one cheating AI just utterly battered us.
Yeah,
completely.
He destroyed us in like half an hour flat. Yeah. So all of us were destroyed. Yeah. My first move was to walk my commander into his base and blow up with the force of a nuclear bomb.
He's like, he just shrugged that off.
That did nothing, stress. Didn't it? As well, that's the thing.
Well, it took out his power economy, so he would have expanded much faster if I hadn't done that. But yeah, it didn't destroy all his stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe next time we'll do it and we'll send like two or three commanders in to.
Yeah, I mean, if three commanders walk into his base and all blow up, then that will destroy everything he has, and that'll be in it. Because it'll destroy his commander too, and that's four nukes in his base.
Yeah, that's true.
We played another one after that as well, where there's six of us, because Owen went home, but then we played against two, was it 200% or 300% ones?
200, so...
And we beat them quite handily.
Yeah, that was really fun. We actually got a chance to... We all built a different experimental, all invaded all at once.
I got to play with it. I never played with the UEF satellite before, but it's basically just a satellite you launch. It's like the GoldenEye satellite you launch from your own base, and it goes up in the sky and it floats around, and it's impossible to kill unless you destroy
the
home base.
It's a unit on the battlefield, but it's so high up that nothing can target it, so it's right up next to the camera.
I was lasering everything. I mean, it's not hugely powerful, but it's just really irritating for the computer, and you can see them just going,
no!
Giant jerk in the sky. Yeah. It just keeps beaming you with a thing that you can't ever stop.
We want a satellite in real life now.
But that's really cool because you can curtail the way the AI expands. The terrifying thing about AI is it can think about everything at once. Yeah. So it can manage 50 different engineers
all
taking
all
different mass extractors and setting up fire bases. But if they don't have shields, you can just burn them when they do that.
Even with the shields, I've managed to rip through them fairly quickly.
Right, shall we do some questions from Twitter?
Yeah. Okay. I asked for general questions, and also asked people to tell us about a moment that they were proud to be a PC gamer.
Ah, okay. Well, the first one is from Phil. It's about with a three.
What?
It's about half with a six.
Where?
Which says his proudest moment was when PSN went down. So proud.
Is he part of a gamer? Is he a hacker? Is he?
Yeah, it must be. XG247 Alex asks, how brilliant is it that TF2 is now free to play? I think very, as Sasha now has more victims for bullet. I think you wanted me to read that in the Heavy's accent.
I think you did, sort of.
I don't do accents.
You just did a mini one then.
I don't do mini accents.
Was that your regular voice?
Never happened.
That was regular voice. X25 Killer says, pride gets in the way of things. As long as I'm having fun in my video games, I'm happy.
Oh. That's a really like diplomatic.
Question.
What he's saying is he has nothing to be proud of.
This is a man who claims to have killed 25 people.
25 X's.
25 X's. The Kong Produce says, "I'll just say I like PC."
Totally.
Big Mike 302 says his proudest day was the day TF2 came out. When the orange box came out, it was the first thing I waited in line for.
Oh.
I was working at Future when Half-Life 2 came out. And for some reason, I think we bought it, like the box version of it. And went into game, went home, and there were loads and loads and loads of people who looked quite scruffy clutching game boxes. And there was a kind of like silent nod of respect as we walked past each other.
Tom and I had a silent nod of respect as we were wearing our homemade hats.
Okay, but like
setting off party poppers. Yeah. It's a team unlocked.
Aircraft on Fire asks, are there any video game tie-in comics you would recommend?
So comics that tie into video games, yeah, rather than comics.
I mean, if you like Star Wars, The Old Republic comic is all right.
There's better Star Wars comics out there.
But there are better Star Wars.
You should read the Rogue Squadron books because they're incredible. Or the books, and I say incredible, they're incredible to me at 13 years old, and they probably still are.
Just read Sandman, for God's sakes.
The Rogue Squadron comics are quite good.
Obviously, Valve do a bunch.
Yeah.
There's a Left 4 Dead 1, a Portal 2 1, and obviously TF2 ones with all the different
They're all cheating because they're all free, aren't they?
TF2s are probably the funniest. Well, they're definitely the funniest. I think they're the best.
Max Ursa says, has anyone tried Tesco's new strawberry and clotted cream sandwich yet?
What?
Well,
do not want.
Do we have a Tesco's?
We have a Tesco Express.
Yeah.
GeForce FX says, do you guys watch pro StarCraft matches? If so, yes. What's your favourite player? Yes, we do. And my favourite player is, not player, he's manager of Boxer or Slayer, or Team Slayers rather. He's seller because I met him in Los Angeles and he was lovely.
He was he competed in season one at least, I think maybe season two as well.
But he's kind of like
of the GSL, is this?
Well, who's the guy who managed England rugby team? Clive Woodward. Is that the guy I'm thinking of?
Dallaglio did it at some point, didn't he?
He basically he's got this kind of like, well, I'm just gonna do this and this to my team. And they're going to win. And he's much younger than all the other StarCraft pro managers.
Mm.
And he is just a genius. He gets it. And there's a great story he was telling about he was managing the Korean esports team. And the way it was working is that there were five managers and they each had a day to manage the team during the competitions. And for the first 4 days, they lost, like, continually. And that's not good for the Korean esports team. Mm-hmm. Sana comes in, manages it for 1 day, and they start winning everything. It's just because he went, let's do it this way. I just think that's awesome that can exist in PC gaming.
Tactical, like,
genius.
It's well worth watching his stream. If you are interested in StarCraft as well, obviously watch his stream. Because
his stream's amazing. He's absolutely brilliant.
He teaches you, there's a tutorial about how to eat fried chicken, and it's just him going like, this is nice.
The other thing, like, he does cool stuff like, because he has loads and loads of followers on his stream.
He's got good English as well. So.
He wants people to be happy. He wants people to have a good time when they're playing, and like, he wants the game to be fun. And he'll often kind of take his enormous community and like go and hang out in someone else's stream.
Who've got
two or three guys watching it, and suddenly they've got like 100 or 200 or 500 people watching them playing StarCraft. He's done it with Silver League.
Yeah, he's done it with like Silver League and stuff. And he says to them, like, never give up. People are watching you. People care about you. It's really sweet.
He's just an absolutely wonderful guy.
Who's your favourite player, Tom?
I got to go with Nesty. I'm a Zerg nerd, he's just like, he's essentially psychic. He understands what people will do in different situations to the point that he doesn't need to find out what they're going to do. If you've got some crazy rush strategy planned, he just knows you're going to do it and he just has the defense already.
I think the most amazing one for Nesto was the game versus Sun, where he did the really quick expand and he put three spine crawlers down the middle of the thing. Poked away into
If you don't know anything about the game, and I didn't know that wasn't known, because it was something I thought about doing that. But I don't know near enough about the game to know whether it would actually be effective. But basically, needed to stop someone from getting up, from keeping a expansion at Patch of Minerals. But it didn't have enough units to take it down. So he just built spine crawlers, which are like turrets, but you can only build them on creep. So he had like a special way of dripping the creep down.
Yeah,
and
he's an overlord to drop.
But even if you don't know anything about the mechanics or what's going on, just listening to the commentator's reaction to that is just...
Oh my God!
Tasis and Artosis. Artosis, his mind is blowing on the spot. Like, oh my God, the matchup just changed forever. Okay. Go on Battle Debt tonight and you'll get fucked by this.
I think... For me, I like Jinro best.
Yeah, because you've got a Jinro T-shirt.
I do. I got that from Japan. It's a
they call him the Gorilla Terran.
They do. It's a sophisticated Gorilla Terran. He's called now, but he's
very hairy.
Just because he looks like one.
But I love the way, because I play Terran as well. And I love his macro style and the fact that he can pop down bases everywhere and expand like a Zerg does. I like that.
That's my boss. I don't want to answer that. Radaron asks, published twice in the last 3 months in Send, good enough to become a regular freelancer? Hey, you said ask and I think.
Let's not answer that one.
Let's not answer that one. No, that's Mr. My boss again. Dave Deck asks, which Deus Ex ending do you believe is best and why? Personally, I'm a Helios ending guy myself.
Yeah, I went for Helios. I want to rule the world as an AI hybrid lunatic.
I like the dance ending.
Dance ending is very good.
Super secret for that. I went for the knock everything back to the Stone Age and let's start again ending.
Oh, Stone Ages suck. Tim?
I like the idea of city states.
Isn't that the ending to something else that's really bad? That basically just ripped off the Deus Ex ending.
Don't know. You can do it in Deus Ex 2.
No, I'm thinking it's the ending to a film I watched the other night, The Day the Earth Stood Still. Keanu Reeves sends the Earth back to no electronics.
Spoilers.
Yeah, it's not very good.
Ah, the remake.
I like AI ruling the planet is where it's going.
Yeah. Tony is the only one I know who thinks the Illuminati ending is best.
Yeah, but that's weird, so because he thinks that giving power to a bunch of old men,
electronic old men,
six
rule the world.
Should recreate that.
I just suddenly want to do like a video skit where we just do all the Deus Ex endings. But yeah, Tony just thinks that he can trust old men.
Electronical man. They rule the world.
XG24 Alex also asks, what is the best name you've renamed a TF2 item to?
My knife is Mother, and my gun is Wiggles.
Wiggles. I saw. Oh shit! Sorry, I've completely forgotten the name. That someone named the Huntsman to something funny, and I've forgotten what it was. Worst story ever.
I haven't renamed any of mine.
His description for it though was, it cost one piece of wood to fire this bow for 1 minute.
What? Woody the Hobo. He doesn't look like a hobo in his picture. A proud moment when I played Morrowind for the first time.
I remember playing Morrowind for the first time. It was at university. I knew nothing about the Elder Scrolls series, and I just always wanted an RPG that was like the games I played, which are first-person shooters. Like, I hate dice rolls, and I hate rules, and I hate turns, and back then I did. And anything that was kind of, like, abstract or nerdy. Well, not anything that was nerdy, obviously. And I kept looking at screenshots, and I think, well, it's not third-person, it's not party-based, it doesn't seem to be turn-based. There's got to be something wrong with it. There's got to be some reason this game isn't something I'm going to enjoy. And then I fired it up and realizing, shit, this actually is the game I've been waiting for. So fun.
Stimpux asks, does the competitive nature of MMOs and online shooters mean that they will always dominate the free-play market over single-player? Yes. I mean, like, there's no point having a free-to-play single-player game.
Yeah, you're limiting it then, really.
Yeah.
I don't think it's competitive nature, though. I think like a free-to-play co-op game could definitely...
I mean, the thing is that you've got to... you just want to make a game that you say, do you want to play this with me?
Yeah.
Because that's how it spreads. I actually think that if I was going to start a PC games developer now... I would make a Diablo clone where you buy the next character class in a League of Legends style.
Yeah. Because, I mean, League of Legends, I'm surprised it's as... Well, I assume it's massively popular. We kind of get the impression it is from the amount of, you know, traffic that we see coming up around it. But it's surprising that something that's so fiercely competitive and kind of...
Scary to get into as well.
Yeah, it's, you know, hostile in some ways and not in others. There are some lovely people playing it who will help you play it. But it's a game where if you fuck up, your team will hate you. Like, and I'm surprised that kind of thing can catch on in a big way. I would much more expect something like Torchlight, where you just play together and you, you know,
there is a kind of the reverse of that though. That is that maybe it catches on because you want to play with people you know, and so you try and convince them.
Yeah, because you need someone your skill level.
Yeah.
Make games suck with strangers, so people force their friends to play it.
It's the same thing with StarCraft as well. Like, I feel myself getting demonstrably better, and then any game where I actually feel myself, you know, I have an obvious curve in my ability has more of a draw over me than something like Torchlight, where, you know, my character will get better, but it's not like I'll still be clicking on stuff. Mm. And they'll be similarly.
Imagine both of those things.
Well, that's some kind of incredible miracle dream.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's everything we've got. We've answered all the questions. Not that many today, actually, mates, because we're doing it in the morning.
Yeah, I only asked like a second before we came on air.
Everyone's still asleep.
So thank you very much for listening. We'll have another podcast up shortly, and we'll try and get some more interview stuff up, like what we did with Day 9 and some other guys.
Chris Taylor.
We're holding... There is a podcast that we've recorded with Brink, Autor, Ed Stern, but we're going to hold it hostage until Brink is for sale in the UK.
Fancy.
Yeah.
Any fair.
All right. Thank you, guys. We'll speak to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.